Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm not Eric or Tim, which means I'm Joshua. Your mysterious old hosts are celebrating the 4th by giving ourselves the whole week off. While we enjoy a well-earned break, we invite you to enjoy The Best of Morals Live, featuring two of our favorite performances from our newest Patreon-only podcast, The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, live. The first presentation is our rendition of The Cabin from Gunsmoke. The second is an original play by yours truly, The Silence of Death from Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk. Both productions were recorded live at Crooner's Supper Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. If you like these performances and want to hear more, go to ghoulishdelights.com/themorals and become a patron today. You'll find more episodes of Morals Live, archived video recordings of our performances at the Bryant Lake Bowl Theater, and a smorgasbord of other Patreon-only podcasts, including B-Sides of the Mysterious Old Radio, Secrets of the Mysterious Old Radio, Cliffhangers of Doom, and so much more. We'll be back next week with our regularly scheduled podcast, but in the meantime, enjoy the show.
Good evening, everybody. By a round of applause, please. Who is seeing the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society for the first time? Or wave. That's awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
Well, welcome. Tonight, we will perform two short plays using nothing but our voices, Eric's keyboard, and the seemingly random objects you see before you.
It's called Theater of the Mind because it invites you to stage the drama in your own imagination. Everyone in the audience tonight will hear the same plays, but see different productions.
First, some introductions. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Joshua. Together, we are the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a group dedicated to the art of radio drama, past and present.
Now, tonight, we're going to present two classic radio shows that became classic television shows. Our first play is The Cabin from Gunsmoke.
Ooh. I was not expecting that.
That's great. Gunsmoke was created by director Norman McDonald and writer John Meston. The legendary program aired on CBS Radio from April 1952 to June of 1961. Author John Dunning notes the show drew critical acclaim for unprecedented realism, and today is regarded as among one of the best shows of any kind at any time. In other words, you don't have to be a fan of Westerns to enjoy Gunsmoke's brand of well-crafted, emotionally resonant storytelling.
Gunsmoke's success led to a television adaptation in 1955. And despite the popularity of the radio series, CBS made the controversial decision not to feature William Conrad and the rest of the radio cast. Instead, the network recast the roles, including Minneapolis native James Arness as Marshall Dillon. The television series lasted an historic 20 years from 1955 to 1975, returning in the late 1980s and early 90s for a series of made-for-TV movies.
In December 1952, the radio version of Gunsmoke broadcast their first Christmas episode, simply titled Christmas Story. Producer Norm MacDonald disliked the holiday episode, deeming it too sweet and sentimental for a program like Gunsmoke. The following week, he aired The Cabin as a way of reestablishing Gunsmoke as radio's grittiest Western.
The Cabin was written by Gunsmoke co-creator John Meston, who, like MacDonald, had a particular dislike for bland and simplistic Westerns like The Lone Ranger and Hopalong Cassidy, believing they romanticized their heroes while sanitizing the brutality of the era. In contrast, Meston strived to make Matt Dillon a distinctly fallible hero, one who lost just as much as he won. According to Meston, Dylan was almost as scarred as the homicidal psychopaths who drifted into Dodge from all directions.
And now, here is The Cabin from Gunsmoke. First broadcast December 27th, 1952.
Merry Christmas.
Around Dodge City and the territory out west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
It was over 100 miles back to Dodge, but I figured I could make it easy in a day and a half. I'd been in Hays City as a government witness in a murder trial, and I was anxious to get back. So I rode out of Hays one morning a couple hours before light. The ground was clear as snow, but it was midwinter, and it was sharp cold. When the day came, there was no sun, only dark gray sky drilled by a high, cold, searching wind. The air was as thin as I could ever remember it being, and behind me in the north lay a great slab of blackness. When I saw that, should have turned back. But the wind stood out of the north, too, and sooner or later would drive that black slab right down on top of me. This was blizzard weather, the kind of weather that kills the land and everything on it. I don't know why I went on, maybe because of the wind. You know, a high wind will distemper a man, make him drunk-like. Anyway, I didn't turn back. And about noon, the sky began to turn white with snow, and I could smell a touch of moisture in the air. And finally it came, the sleet shrilling in on the wind like small buckshot as the blizzard howled down the prairie. I couldn't look right or left without being stung blind. As long as I could keep the wind on my back, I knew I was headed south. 2 hours of this, I could feel my horse slowing down and weakening under me, my own body stiffening with the cold. Men died when they got caught in a thing like this. They died easy. Another hour passed, and my horse was carrying his head close to the ground. I figured he'd stumble soon, so I kicked my feet out of the stirrups and braced myself against the storm. By now, the wind had really gotten into me. And when I saw the blur of a ranch house up ahead, I thought maybe it was a trick. But a few minutes later, we rounded the corner of the place and stood last in the lee of the storm. I slid down and got up to the door, and I pounded on it. And I waited. Then I pounded again. Then the door came open, and the figure stood in the light.
Who are you?
Bring him in, Alvy. Any man out in that weather has been made harmless.
Get inside.
Out of the way, Alvy, you fool. All right, stranger. Hands in the air. High. That's better. Unload him, Alvy.
Nice gun, Hack. Real nice gun.
Shut up! Take him down, stranger. You can come up to this stove now, but don't try nothing. I'll cut you in half with buckshot.
He was a burly man with flushed cheeks and a wild red beard and great shock of red hair. Even his hands and fingers bristled with it. He sat on a stool by the stove, a shotgun across his knees, and his eyes never left me. The other one, Alvy, had a body of an unfed boy. But he was completely bald, and his skin was tight and dry. He looked like a naked skull in his eyes. something had touched Alvy.
You look half-froze, stranger. You must have wanted something real bad to go out in weather like this.
I never saw him around here before, heck.
He's a stranger, Alvy. He don't belong around here.
Of course, we don't know anybody. But I've seen a few, and I've never seen him before.
Maybe he's seen you, Alvy, somewhere.
Well, no, not me. He's never seen me nowhere.
How do you know that?
Well, maybe he was just looking for some cows and got lost in the storm.
You're just a kid, Alvy. Always said you don't know much. Bell! Bell, get out here!
She was a pretty girl, with a dark, half-wild look that I'd never seen before in a woman. Her eyes jumped from man to man and then came to rest on me, fixed and curious. And then after a moment, she looked away and moved into a chair across the room.
Supper ready, Bell? It's awful cold out.
You recognize him, Bell? You ever seen him before?
No.
Sure now. Maybe Hayes City. Maybe you saw him up there somewhere.
I don't know him.
You sure?
Yes.
If you're lying to me, you know what I'll do to you.
I never saw him before.
He came in here half froze out of the blizzard. Must have been looking for some cows and got lost.
Shut up, Alvy. We don't know what he's doing here, Bill.
Why shouldn't a man get out of the storm even in here?
That's enough. All right, stranger. We never saw you before. We don't know who you are. And as soon as I think you're lying, I'm going to blow a big hole in you.
What about my horse? I'd like to put my horse in the barn if you got one.
Alvy?
Oh, no, heck. I ain't going out there. I'll freeze.
And the horse will freeze if you don't.
It's his horse.
We might need it. Go on, Alvy, before I get cross.
All right, I'll go. Don't know why my horse is so important.
Alvy's a good boy. He'll put up your horse.
Thank you.
Supper's about ready.
Leave it. I want to talk to our friend here first. Maybe we won't have to feed him.
Well, the potatoes will get mealy.
They better not, that's all. I'm right curious about you, mister.
Yeah, well, I've noticed that.
I'll blow your guts all over the wall you make fun of me. Don't get me mad, mister. I got the shotgun.
Meat'll be boiled to shreds if we don't eat soon.
You just won't understand any other way, will you, Bill?
What is it you want to know about me?
Yeah, I can tell, mister. I can handle you. Easy now.
What do you mean?
All I gotta do is wallop the girl and you'll talk. I don't have to do nothing to you.
All right. All right, if I take my jacket off, I've warmed up now.
I mind. You might have a gun hidden out under there.
He can raise his hands. I'll unbutton it.
Well, that's right smart of you, Bell.
Oh. I'll hide it.
No. Leave it be.
Bell? Come over here, Bell. Drop the jacket, Bell. Now hold out the other hand. Open it, Bell. Open your hand. That's real bad what you did, Bell. Real bad. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna put you outside for a spell. Out in the weather. After supper. After you've cleaned up supper. You can be thinking about it till then. United States Marshal. You're in bad company, Marshal. You shouldn't have come here.
Oh? Looks to me like I sort of struck gold coming here.
Now, why do you talk like that, Marshal? I still got the shotgun.
Oh, let me get at that stove. Seems like it's getting colder and colder.
You didn't see any sign of nobody outside, did you, Elvy?
Well, who?
Somebody might have come along to cover the marshal here is all.
Marshal? What marshal?
Me. I'm a marshal, Elvy.
Shoot him, Hack, shoot him!
Shut up and answer me. Was there a sign of another horse? Footprints, anything like that?
No, I didn't see nothing.
Maybe you didn't look.
Look, would I have walked in here the way I did if I'd been after you people?
Maybe your head got muddled with the cold. Where'd you ride from, Marshal?
Hay City. Left there this morning. Huh.
It was a fool thing to do with a blizzard coming up.
Maybe.
Did you think you could get the jump on us easier in a storm? Was that it, Marshal?
Yeah, you knew we'd be trying to keep cozy in here.
I'm curious, Hack. What are you and Allie on the run for?
Oh, don't you tell him, Hack. I don't trust him at all.
Alvy, it'd be mighty dull without you, boy.
Don't laugh at me, Hack. Now stop it! I don't like laughing. You know that, Hack. Don't you do it no more. I got ways.
Yeah. I've seen you and your ways. But don't try them on me, Alvy.
Maybe I won't.
Look, Alvy, now you don't understand. It's all right to tell the marshal about us. He ain't going nowhere.
No?
No, of course not. We'll kill him, Alvy. We'll kill him and bury him somewhere.
Oh, am I sure? No, no, why didn't I think of that?
Because I do the thinking for us, Alvy. That's why. Now, what was it you like to know, Marshal?
Stop playing games, Hack.
Me and Alvy are wanted for murder.
Up in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Seems it's a mite unfair, though. We didn't aim to kill nobody. Just happened that way.
We was robbing a bank.
Yeah, and a couple of the people there wouldn't do what we told them, so Alva used his knife on one, but just made the man holler.
Could hear him all over town.
And we had to shoot our way out after that. Must have killed 3 or 4 people.
Oh, I know. I killed 2.
Worst of it was, Marshal, all we wanted just then was some money. We didn't care about killing anybody. But you know how it is, Marshal, when you're robbing a bank and all.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
No, I don't suppose you do it that. Anyway, we're, wanted for murder, and we didn't even get any money.
Nary a dollar.
So we rode out here and lied it for a spell.
I see. What about Belle? And whose place is this anyway?
My place, now that Pa's gone.
You mean you were living here alone?
No.
They killed your Pa, is that it?
Yes.
How long ago?
I don't know, maybe a month.
Yeah. It's been about a month, hasn't it, Alvy?
35 days.
There, you see. Alvy always knows just how long everything's been.
Yeah, that's fine. Tell me what you did with him.
Who?
The old man.
Oh, we buried him out back. Couldn't afford a funeral, could we, Alvy?
Hack. Hack. Hack, we told him that. Now let's shoot him.
No, no. I've been thinking it over. People in Hay City know he started for Dodge, and when he don't show up, they might come looking for him.
But you said we'd bury him, Hack. That's what you said.
Yeah, that's right, but we can't bury his horse, too. Not in this ground. It's froze solid. And if we turn the horse loose and they find it and can't find the marshal's body, then they'll suspect something.
Pretty smart, Hack. Too bad you don't know enough to stop killing people.
Too bad for you, anyway.
What are we gonna do, Hack? I'm getting hungry.
That supper won't be fit to eat it.
Shut up. One more word out of you, Belle, and I'll whoop you good.
Come on, Hack. I'm really hungry.
No, no. Listen to me, Alvy. Now, my idea is to knock the marshal on the head and throw him outside to freeze. Now, he'll keep real good that way. And when the storm breaks, we can carry him off 20 miles or so and dump him on the ground. Look like he got throwed and hit his head on froze.
Well, that's fine, Hack. That's just fine.
Then we'll break his horse's leg, make it easier for them to find him.
You just don't care about anything, do you, Hack?
Just me. Sometimes, Alvy.
Sure. Me and Hack are friends, aren't we, Hack?
Of course. If it don't stop snowing, we'll have to think of something else. Can't leave tracks for them to follow back here.
Hack, ain't we gonna kill him now?
Sure. Sure we are, Alvy. I didn't mean that.
Let me hit him, huh? You keep the gun on him, and I'll get behind and hit him. There were a brand of iron around here or something. I hit him with that!
Hack, you've sunk pretty far, but I'm sort of wondering just how far.
What do you mean?
I'm wondering if you're low enough to kill a man before he's been fed.
Here it is, Hack. Here, you see? I found it.
Leave it be, Alvy. We're gonna eat first.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, this Sunday night, Lionel Barrymore is your host and Joseph Cotton the star on Sunday Night Playhouse's gripping historical drama based on the life of Peter Marshall. Hear how a Scottish immigrant lad rose to the position of chaplain of the United States Senate. A story you'll agree is far more fascinating than fiction. Remember, it's tomorrow night when Lionel Barrymore introduces another Sunday Night Playhouse on most of these same CBS radio stations. Now, for the second act of Gunsmoke.
It was only 5 in the afternoon, but the blizzard had darkened the land, and its blackness showed in at the windows. Here and there along the walls of the ranch house, trickles of snow blew in through the warped timber. In the kitchen, Hack sat directly behind me while I ate. Later, he changed places with Alvy and fed himself heartily, as though he had nothing at all on his mind. Hack was just a nerveless brute, born with no conscience at all. His intelligence was the instinct of an animal that snapped at or killed whatever got in its way of survival. Every living thing was his enemy. And Alvy? There was no way to figure Alvy. Too much of him was missing. My only chance lay in the girl, Belle, even though Hack had pretty well beaten all resistance out of her. Supper was over soon enough, but Hack seemed in no particular hurry to get on with his plans.
I've eaten better food on the trail than that.
Can't blame me for that.
Get it cleaned up, Belle. You can talk your head off when you're outside alone. And you're going outside. I'll learn you to heal if I have to break your neck.
No, don't do that, Hack. Not till we're ready to pull out anyway.
Why?
Well, I ain't gonna do the cooking.
Well, I hope not. I've eaten your cooking.
My sister was a good cook.
Yeah, we should have brought her along, Alvy.
No, I don't like her.
Where are you from, anyway?
Which, me or Alvy?
How about we start with you?
Wyoming. Place called Crowheart. I didn't stay there long, though.
What about you, Alvy?
Now, where were you born, Alvy? I never did know.
Republican River.
That's not a place, you fool.
That's what they told me, Republican River. They always lived in a wagon, my mom and pa. Had a lot of kids, too. Of course, most of them died. I'm about the only one that made out any good at all.
You did fine, Alvy, fine. Give me the shotgun. All right, Marshall. Let's get back by the stove while Belle cleans this mess up.
Should we hit him and throw him out to freeze up now, Hack?
Not yet. I want to punish Belle first.
You know, someday you're going to get caught without that shotgun, Hack. Someone's going to tear you apart.
That's fair enough, Marshal.
Give me a fair chance at you, then. Barehanded.
No.
You're bigger than I am, Hack. Might be fun for you.
I don't know nothing about fun. I ain't going to kill you because it's fun.
Oh, come on, Hack. I want to go to bed.
Belle, come out here. Get outside like I told you. And don't open that door so wide you'll blow the lamp out.
Had walked through the room and out the door without a glance at any of us. I figured she'd go down to the barn where she'd be all right for a little while anyway, but I knew I'd have to make a move soon. I sure wasn't going to sit there like a fall hog and let Alvy knock me in the head whenever he got ready, but it didn't take much more sense to try to jump Hack with that shotgun and let him blow me all over the place. It was a beggar's choice. The more I thought about it, the matter I got.
Hack, I'm sleepy. Gonna hit him and go to bed. Do whatever you want after, but I ain't staying up all night.
Alvy's got his mind made up, Marshal. I can tell.
What do you call his mind, Hack?
I got ways to fix you, Marshal.
Never mind, Alvy. Wrap something around that iron, otherwise it won't look like he hit his head on a rock.
Well, what difference don't make?
Do what I say, Alvy.
All right, Hack, here. Use this curtain.
Now, keep your eyes on me, Marshal.
Alvy moved around behind me. I was getting a good grip on his branding iron. I learned slightly forward in the chair and was tensed and waiting for the split second when my instinct told me to jump. And then suddenly, the door was flung wide open and the wind roared in, almost lifting the room as it came. The lamp flared, and as it went out, I was pointed sideways from the chair.
Did you hit him, Alvy? Alvy, did you hit him? You bloody fool, don't you try nothing, Marshal. I got some more shells right here. Don't you move now.
I crawled across the room and was out the door before Hack could reload. In the snow outside, I stood up and turned to find Belle waiting by the side of the door. I pitched a pitchfork in her hand. I couldn't see her face very well in the dark, but I could tell she was shaking with cold. I reached out and took the fork from her. And then she flattened against the wall, and I flattened against the wall with her, and we waited.
I was afraid it was you he shot.
It was a smart trick, Belle, throwing the door open that way.
He shot Alvy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Good.
I think he's found out I'm not in there.
What are you gonna do?
Wait.
Marshal! Marshal, I'm gonna kill you and the girl both!
Now I waited, praying he'd come through the door before my hands got too cold to hold the pitchfork. And finally the barrel of the shotgun appeared waist high and began to poke its way around in our direction. It was stupid of him, but a man behind a gun often gets a false sense of power. I let him shove it out 3 or 4 inches, and then I slammed it down on top of the floor. Then I jumped into the room. Hack tried to club me with a gun, but he missed. And then I got under him with a fork, and I lifted him off of his feet. He struggled for a moment like a speared fish. Then he went limp. I let him fall. One of the prongs had reached his heart.
Did you get him, Marshal? Is he dead?
Yeah. Light the lamp.
I can't do it, Marshal. My fingers are too stiff.
Here. I'll do it. There. It's quite a mess in here. Why don't you wait in the kitchen, Belle?
I'm all right, Marshal, but I can't help you much till I get warmed up.
Well, then you stay by the stove. I'll lug these people outside.
Thank you, Marshal. Marshal? Marshal? Dylan?
What? Oh, morning. Morning, Belle.
Come on out in the kitchen, Marshal. It's warm there, and I got some hot coffee waiting.
That sounds good, Belle. Say, it looks like the storm's lifted.
It has. The wind's gone, but it's mighty cold out.
Well, I don't mind the cold. It's that wind that breaks a man down.
There. Get some of that in you.
You make mighty good coffee, Belle.
Yeah. Tell me something, Marshal. Tell me the truth now.
Sure, Belle. What is it?
Are you married?
I I'd make a poor husband, Belle, for any woman.
Why?
Well, in my profession, it's too chancy.
Thank you, Marshall. Thanks for putting it that way.
No, Belle, I didn't mean...
No, forget it. I'm leaving this place, Marshall.
What?
Well, as soon as you go, I've packed what I need and I'm clearing off.
Where you go?
I got 3 horses. I'll ride up to Hayes City and sell them.
Then what?
Well, I'll buy some pretty clothes and I'll find a place. Won't be hard after this.
I wish I could help you, Belle.
You have.
But I mean...
I can take care of myself, Marshall. I just want to get away from here, that's all.
Sure. I'll stop at the nearest ranch. I'll tell the men to come over here and take care of Hack and Elvie as soon as it warms up.
Whatever you like, Marshall.
Well, goodbye, Belle.
Goodbye, Marshall. Look me up in Hayes City next time you're there.
Sure. Sure, I will. But, Belle, don't let all this make you bitter. There are lots of good men in the world.
So they say. So long, Marshall.
So long, Belle. A few minutes later, I had saddled up. I was on the trail back to Dodge. Sky was low and slate gray all over, but there was no wind. The blizzard had gone, leaving the land still and white and bitter cold. There wasn't a sign of life anywhere. It was like riding through a vast tomb. I found myself feeling like a trespasser, as though something had gone wrong. And I wasn't supposed to be there at all.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were John Daner as Hack, Harry Bartell as Alvie, and Vivi Janis as Belle. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Roy Rowan speaking. America now listens to 105 million radio sets and listens most to the CBS radio network.
Thank you. Remember at the introduction she said we were super fun? Our last play tonight for you is The Silence of Death from the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society original series, Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk.
The play was initially inspired by the 1940s radio program, The Adventures of the Thin Man, which followed the exploits of husband and wife detective Nick and Nora Charles. The radio series was based on the film series, which in turn was based on the 1933 novel by Dashiell Hammett, author of The Maltese Falcon.
The film and radio series were lighter in tone than the novel, which led me to wonder, what if I created a crime-fighting couple who combined the inebriated whimsy of the radio and film series, which I love, with the hard-boiled grit of the source material, which I also love? And what-ifing is my favorite part of the writing process, so I decided to linger there a little longer. I thought, what if my crime-fighting couple weren't detectives at all, but masked superheroes? What if they had a dynamic, not unlike Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane, the beloved characters from The Shadow, but unlike those beloved characters, Margot Lane was the hero and Lamont Cranston was the faithful sidekick? What if instead of a Hammett-style mystery, the plot was something gloriously pulpy and undeniably shadow-like? And the biggest what-if of all, what if I stopped procrastinating and started writing? The answer to all these questions are in the play you are about to hear.
And now, please enjoy the silence of death from Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk.
When night descends and hope is lost, one daring couple steps from the shadows to protect the innocent and destroy the guilty. Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk, a thrilling new adventure program brought to you by Lucky Llama Chewing Tobacco. Today's adventure, The Silence of Death. Our story begins in the offices of KBLM Radio, high atop the Carwin Building in downtown Metro City, where station manager Bill Henderson is preparing for a difficult conversation.
Yes?
Lawrence Quimby from the sound effects department is here to see you, sir.
Thank you, Miss Nolan. Send him right in. Mr. Quimby, thank you for coming. Please.
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Don't move. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm going to walk through the door again. Listen carefully this time.
Well? Well, what?
Your door! I've never heard anything like it. The gentle rattle of the knob, the subtle yet manly click of the latch bolt, the luxurious, dare I say, Epicurean creak.
Oh, yeah, that. I've been meaning to have those hinges oiled.
Don't you dare! That creak is absolute perfection. I'll have Lou and maintenance bring the whole door down to my workshop. I want to use it for the next episode of Mysterious Sanctuary.
Mr. Quimby?
I'll probably need the jam as well. A creak isn't just in the hinges, you know. It's a symphony in which every member of the orchestra plays a part.
Mr. Quimby, please. I didn't ask you here to talk about my door. I asked you here to thank you for 4 years of service in this station. You're one of the best sound men in the business.
Oh, thank you, sir. That's very kind. Now about the door.
Which is why it pains me to say this.
I can't have the door?
You're fired.
What?
The station just purchased a library of thousands of phonograph records. Footsteps, gunshots, car horns, bad mimes, you name it. We have a record for it if it can make a noise. Your services are no longer required.
But, sir, a radio drama isn't a radio drama without live sound effects.
I'll tell that to Jerry Kramer over at WMCR. He switched to records last year, and he's cleaning my clock in the Crossleys.
It's not a question of ratings, sir. It's a question of art. Replacing a sound man with a record is like replacing an actor with a parrot. You're mistaking intelligible sound for intelligent sound.
And you're mistaking me for whatever kind of ding-dong is persuaded by parrot analogies. I'm the station manager, Quimby. I care about one thing and one thing only, the bottom line. And like it or not, placing you with a stack of records is going to save this station tens of dollars a week.
Yeah. What about my workshop? All my sound effects? I just built a new rain machine. This one uses sand instead of...
I called the junk man this morning. He's hauling in all the way as we speak.
You can't do this.
It's already done. You can pick up your last check for Miss Nolan on your way out. Goodbye, Mr. Quimby. Did you hear me? I said goodbye. You can leave now, Mr. Quimby. Stop staring at me like that. Say something.
Silence is uncomfortable, isn't it, Mr. Henderson? We take sound for granted until suddenly... it's gone.
You're acting strangely, Quimby. I don't like it. Get out now or I'm calling the cops.
Don't worry, sir. I'm leaving. Enjoy the door slam. It's the last live sound effect you'll ever hear.
It's said that when one door closes, another one opens. But what door will open for Mr. Quimby? And who will be waiting for him on the other side? While we wait for our answers, let me direct your attention to another door, this one located in the palatial home of Metro City's wealthiest family, the Dumonts. It's a singular door because once opened, it will change the lives of two people forever.
Come in.
Pardon me, miss. I thought this was a Mr. Dumont study.
Oh, it is. Mr. Dumont's away on business. He left me in charge. I find the power intoxicating. Or maybe it's the three martinis I had for lunch. All I know is I'm feeling as gay as a goose in a gutter. Can I offer you a nip of something?
No, thanks. I had gin for breakfast. I just came inside to let Mr. Dumont know I finished digging the tulip beds.
Well, I knew I recognized you. You're Maxwell Carter, the gardener. I must admit, I've always had a soft spot for gardeners. They're so tan and muscular. Gentle with their hands, too. I'm Lorna, by the way, Mr. Dumont's daughter. I've been away at finishing school. What do you think? Do I look finished?
One more drink and you'll be shellacked.
Oh, I like you, Mr. Carter. You're hired.
I already have a job, remember? I'm the gardener with the gentle hands.
Well, now you're my chauffeur, too. Have the rolls ready by 8 p.m., the burgundy one, not the topaz.
Do I get a say in this, or is free will an illusion?
Well, I believe you're predestined to have a say in this, so yes to both questions.
You drink a lot for a Calvinist.
You crack wise a lot for a gardener.
Somebody open a window. This banter is getting stifling.
I'm waiting for an answer, Mr. Carter.
How about I pick you up at 8 in the burgundy rolls? I'll give you my answer then.
A reasonable compromise. One question before you go. Do you carry a gun?
Religiously. You never know when a rogue tulip might need putting down.
I like you, Mr. Carter. Did I mention that already?
Some things bear repeating, Miss Dumont. Some things bear repeating.
Lawrence Quimby loses his job while Maxwell Carter finds a second one. Fate is preparing them both. But for what?
Another gin and tonic, Joe.
Sure thing, Mr. Quimby. Hey, what are you closing your eyes for?
I want to see the sounds. Ice clink, glug, glug, glug. Wood scrape.
Wood scrape?
When you slide the drink across the bar to me.
Oh, right.
Sound was my life, Joe. And that rat, Henderson, took it from me. He might as well have killed me. I'm a ghost now. Unseen. Unheard.
I hear you, Mr. Quimby.
Jeez. Warn a guy before you step out of the shadows like that.
Your voice.
Nerve damage. A forget-me-not from the war.
Does it hurt?
Only when I answer imbecilic questions.
Joe, how about a drink for our new friend here?
A pink lady, please. And don't skimp on the grenadine.
Okay. Spill. Who are you and what's the big idea eavesdropping on a private conversation? I said, who are you?
Silence is uncomfortable, isn't it, Mr. Quimby? That's what you said to Bill Henderson.
How do you know that?
It's my business to know the lost souls of this city. To whisper words of hope in their ears.
What possible hope could you offer a has-been like me?
The sweetest hope, Mr. Quimby. The hope of vengeance. Let me show you something.
Is that a gun? Put it away before someone sees it.
It's not a gun, Mr. Quimby. But in the right hands, it could be used as a weapon.
You mean against Mr. Henderson? I don't know. He already threatened to call the police on me once. Maybe I shouldn't push my luck.
What if I told you this device has the power to stop Mr. Henderson from calling the police? The power to silence him the way he silenced you?
I'd say, how about another drink? Hey, Joe! Make that 2 pink ladies.
A few hours later, we find Maxwell Carter at the front gate of the Dumont estate, sitting impatiently in a burgundy Rolls Royce. He believes he's waiting for his new employer, Lorna Dumont. In reality, he is waiting for Destiny. Unfortunately, Destiny is running a little behind schedule.
You're late.
Well, when you're rich, late is on time, on time is early, and early is unspeakably gauche. How do I look?
Radiant. Where to?
The scene of a crime, preferably a murder.
Did I say radiant? I meant inscrutable.
As a wealthy socialite, I'm obligated to have at least one eccentric hobby. I tried flagpole sitting, but Father said it wasn't very ladylike, so I decided to fall back on amateur criminology.
Do you have an address for this hypothetical crime scene, or should I just tootle around until I hear gunshots?
I propose a simpler solution. Turn on the radio.
And then what? Wait for a murderer to be announced? I know you're used to having everything handed to you on a silver platter, but...
We interrupt tonight's program with dance music to bring you this special bulletin.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Earlier tonight, Bill Henderson, station manager at KBLM, was found dead, brutally murdered outside the Corwin building in downtown Metro City. According to Police Commissioner Ignatius Barnes, the victim was...
To the Corwin building, Jeeves.
You're joking, right? No homicide cop in his right mind would let a society dame like you sashay through his crime scene.
True, but my uncle will.
I haven't started driving yet, and I'm already lost.
Oh, didn't I tell you? My uncle is Ignatius Barnes, the commissioner of police.
Now, two seemingly disparate threads are brought together. Murder and the famous Dumont family. What other threads are waiting to be woven? What will the finished tapestry reveal? We'll find out soon. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Let me ask you housewives a question. Are your children bored and grumpy? Does your husband fall asleep in his rocking chair before you put dinner in the oven? Do you long for an exciting new activity to bring pep and verve back into your once happy home? Try Lucky Llama Chewing Tobacco. The only chewing tobacco made for the whole family. Husbands love its bold, masculine flavor. Children love how fun it is to spit. And mothers love its healthy side effects. You see, Lucky Llama chewing tobacco is fortified with vitamin N. That's N for nicotine. 10 times more nicotine than lesser brands of chewing tobacco. So why not pack some pep in your cheek right now and find out why more and more housewives are saying... Lucky Llama is the chew for me.
And now, back to Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk. We rejoin our story just as the burgundy Rolls-Royce screeches to a halt outside the Corwin building, home of KBLM Radio. Lorna Dumont and Maxwell Carter take the elevator to the 23rd floor, only to be stopped outside Bill Henderson's office by a young police officer.
I'm sorry, ma'am. There's been a murder. I can't let you in here.
Do you know who I am, officer? I'm Lorna Dumont of the Metro City Dumonts, and this is my full-time gardener, part-time chauffeur, Maxwell Carter. His family lineage is better left unspoken.
No exceptions, ma'am.
Lorna! Is that you?
Uncle Iggy! I heard you on the radio and thought I'd pop in and say hi.
Officer Binkley, let my niece in here at once.
I'm sorry, sir. It's just... Well, she didn't tell me she was...
Quit flapping your gums and go fetch me some coffee. Hot this time.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Lorna, dear. Oh, what a pleasant surprise. I didn't know you were back from school. You look radiant.
Well, that's what my new chauffeur said.
Technically, I haven't accepted the position yet.
It's only a matter of time, son. Lorna Dumont always gets what she wants.
And what I want right now is to hear all about this ghastly murder. Where's the body?
In the alley. Come over to the window, see for yourself. Careful of the broken glass.
Oh, dear. The poor man looks like a Rorschach test.
That's what a 250-foot drop does to a body.
What are all these black shards? The room is littered with them.
Records. Or at least they used to be. According to Henderson's secretary, Miss Nolan, the station recently acquired a large collection of recorded sound effects. She stayed late to help Henderson organize and catalog everything. Apparently, all this shrapnel represents 4,000 sounds on 1,000 records.
Miss Nolan was here when all this happened?
Yep, in the outer office typing up an alphabetized list of sound effects.
She didn't see anybody come in or out of Mr. Henderson's office?
No, but she left a few times, once to get a typewriter ribbon from the supply closet and once to visit the ladies.
But she didn't hear anything that whole time. Records being smashed, bodies flying through windows, screams of mortal terror.
Not a peep. First thing she remembers is hearing the police sirens. She claims the clacking of her typewriter drowned out all the ruckus.
Unless she plays the typewriter in a 12-piece marching band, I find that hard to believe.
Me too. That's why she's cooling her heels at headquarters. I think it's a clear case of hanky-panky gone wrong. Henderson and this Nolan girl had some fun, and then, for reasons unknown, Henderson called it quits. Miss Nolan flew into a rage, smashed the records, and gave her boss the old heave-ho. Case closed.
It adds up, but Henderson was on the husky side, at least when his guts were on the inside. You think this dame has the horsepower to fling a grown man out the window?
Back when I was walking the beat, I once saw an angry wife throw a Buick at her two-timing husband. All four wheels left the ground, just a slip of a thing, too. I tell you, son, hell hath no fury.
Miss Dumont, you're uncharacteristically silent on the subject of whodunit.
No, I'm just watching you two peacocks spread your majestic plumage. Don't stop strutting on my account, boys.
Aw, you got your mother's sarcasm, dear.
And my father's money. I'm the luckiest girl in the world.
Okay, Seamus. Who do you think did it?
Well, I have no idea. I'm far too sober to solve a mystery.
My man already dusted the drink cabinet. Help yourself.
Pardon my French, sir, but you're shockingly laissez-faire for a police commissioner.
Ah, Lorna has that effect on me. I remember when she was just 9 years old. She talked me into taking her out on patrol. We caught a pickpocket that night.
Was he the one I kneecapped with your billy club?
That's the one. I was so proud of you.
Here's your drink, Miss Dumont. I call it the murder teeny. Mm. It's 3 parts gin, 1 part fingerprint powder.
It tastes like prohibition. Uncle Iggy, do you have a list of people who work at the station?
Somewhere, yes. Let's see. Here it is. Are you looking for a particular name?
No, a particular job. Those records got me thinking. Aha, Lawrence Quimby, head of the sound effects department. Have you talked to him yet?
Yeah, he was canned earlier in the day. Miss Nolan said he and Henderson had quite the knockdown dragout. Apparently, this record library was purchased for the express purpose of replacing Quimby and his corny handmade sound effects.
So, no motivation there.
Look here, son. Sarcasm doesn't suit you the way it does, my niece. Quimby has an alibi. We found him drowning in sorrows in some gin joint called the Blue Ruin. Bartender said he was there all night.
A screen window is more airtight than that alibi.
Oh, ignore the chauffeur, Uncle. I'm sure your instincts about Miss Nolan are spot on. Bring the car around, Mr. Carter.
Around where? We're parked in the front of the building.
Car, now.
As my lady commands.
Oh, good night, Uncle. Take care of yourself. You look tired.
I don't get much sleep these days. Mm. Not since your mother...
She's gone. It's best to move on. She would have wanted it that way.
I'm her brother. I should have protected her. Failing that, I should have found the man who...
Give it time. We'll find him. By we, I mean you, of course. Love and kisses, Uncle Iggy.
Yeah. Love and kisses, Lorna.
I assume you know how to get to the Blue Ruin. Well, I'll take that as a yes. You're very stoic all of a sudden, Mr. Carter. Penny for your thoughts?
I like you, Miss Dumont. I like your long legs and smart mouth. I like them so much I don't mind losing sleep to drive you around all night. I don't mind mixing your drinks with a dead guy's cocktail shaker. I don't even mind playing Gracie to your George in whatever comedy routine you were putting on for your uncle. But I won't be kept in the dark. You found some clue back there. Something everyone missed. All that jazz about the fired sound man just confirmed what you already suspected. And it rattled you. You encouraged your uncle's flimsy femme fatale theory to keep him safe because you think this Quimby character is the killer. But I keep tripping over the elephant in the room. Why didn't Miss Nolan hear a violent murder being committed in the office next door?
You call that an elephant? It's barely a chihuahua. Miss Nolan didn't hear the murder because Mr. Quimby did it without making a sound.
How?
He silenced the room.
What?
But I don't know how else to say it. Somehow Quimby turned off the sound in Henderson's office. You were there, Mr. Carter. Think back. When we walked across the room to the window, what sound did it make?
None.
Precisely. We should have heard the record pieces crunching under our shoes, but we didn't. What about the latch on the drink cabinet? Did it click when you opened it? Did the gin glug from the bottle and splash against the glass? When my uncle rummaged through the wads of paper in his pockets, looking for the list, did you hear anything? Anything at all? When you stormed off, angry at being sent to the car, kicking glass and record shards as you went, did you get the satisfaction of hearing them skitter and ricochet? No, just silence.
The silence of death.
No, well, let's not get melodramatic, Mr. Carter. It wasn't the silence that killed Mr. Henderson. It was the 23-story belly flop.
But what could erase the sound from an entire room?
Well, we'll never find out parked on the side of the road, will we?
Blue Ruin, here we come.
Meanwhile, at the gin mill in question, a slightly inebriated Lawrence Quimby celebrates his victory. Perhaps a little too soon.
Joe, somebody stole my gimlet. Joe, 1 minute was right here in my glass, and the next minute, gone. Just like that.
You drank it, Mr. Quimby. I watched you do it.
I did? Well, that's a relief. I thought I was going to have to call the gimlet police. They're like the regular police, only happier. Speaking of the law, I want to thank you, Joe. Thank you for telling those coppers I was here with you all night, drinking, instead of, well, you know, killing my boss! You're a real pal, Joe.
I'm not your pal, Quimby. You turned my stomach. The only reason I lied for you was because the whispering man threatened to break my legs if I didn't.
Both of them? That seems excessive.
Restraint is for the weak.
Stop sneaking up on me like that.
I believe you have something that belongs to me, Mr. Quimby.
Oh, the silencer? Sure, I got it right here. Boy, it worked just the way you said it would. All I did was flip the switch and presto, silence in the library. You should have seen the look on Henderson's face. He kept opening and closing his mouth, but no sound came out. It reminded me of you.
I'm losing my patience, Mr. Quimby.
No better your patience than your voice. What's it like? Did you shout for help as the gas filled the trench? Could you hear yourself? I mean, in your head, or was the silence on the inside, too?
This is your final warning, Mr. Quimby.
Mustard gas burns more than just your throat, doesn't it? Your eyes, your face. Is that why you turn your collar up like that? Wear your hat so low.
Enough! Give me the device, or else...
Oh, put that pea shooter away. You wouldn't shoot. You wouldn't dare. A stray bullet might ding this precious silencer of yours.
Careful with that, you imbecile. It's the prototype.
So, build another one.
I can't. The man who built it... Well, we had a certain philosophical differences. He died.
I was always just a pawn, wasn't I?
Of course you were. I needed a sap to test the device. So I'm foolish enough to use it, but clever enough not to get caught.
Now you know it works. What are you going to do with it?
Another war is brewing, Mr. Quimby. Apparently the first one didn't stick. How much do you think the German government would pay for such a device? Imagine silent German planes dropping silent German bombs. Air raid sirens that offer no warning. Just silence until the screaming starts.
You're a monster,
says the man who threw his boss out a 23rd floor window. The device, please, or I shoot the bartender.
Don't do it, Quimby. My old man died on the end of a German bayonet. I'll gladly take a bullet to keep that thing out of Hitler's grubby paws.
So, the bartender has a spine after all. Excellent. It's no fun to shoot a coward.
What's to stop me from making a break for the door?
I have two armed men waiting in a car outside. Two more around back. I thought of everything, Mr. Quimby.
Actually, you forgot one important thing. A little something we drunks like to call Dutch courage.
Quimby, look out!
Ha!
As the Blue Rune erupts into chaos, we slip back in time to exactly 5 minutes prior. A dark figure approaches a burgundy Rolls Royce, discreetly parked in the shadows between street lamps.
Well, how'd the reconnoiter go? Any giants in the promised land?
No giants. Just some disagreeable-looking gunsels. Two in front, another two loitering in back.
I wouldn't have pegged Quimby for a gangster.
Maybe they're not with Quimby.
Mr. Carter, are you suggesting a seedy gin mill on the wrong side of town could be host to more than one ruthless criminal on this balmy but deadly Friday night?
Only one way to find out.
Wait, put this on first.
A mask?
Well, I can't risk anyone recognizing you. I have the Dumont name to think about. Imagine the headlines. Dumont Gardner arrested in gin-soaked hullabaloo.
If I wear this corny Lone Ranger gear, do you promise to stay here in the car no matter what?
I promise. Now put it on. My, don't you look dashing. Those tough guys will swoon at the sight of you.
Just stay in the Rolls, please.
As Maxwell Carter makes his way down a darkened alley toward the back of the Blue Ruin, Leroy attempts to engage his partner Reggie in small talk, unaware that they're about to become the first hoodlums in history to come face-to-face with our yet-to-be-named heroes.
Hey, Reggie. You think the boss really heard his voice in the war? Or do you think it's one of the, what do you call them, affectations? You know, like wearing a monocle or chewing with your mouth shut.
Yeah, we don't get paid to think, Leroy, which is, in your case, a blessing. Now shut your trap and keep sharp. In my experience, jobs like these always go south when you least expect it.
And there's my cue.
Oh, Reggie, behind ya! Grab some air, Zorro.
I think he busted my nose. Shoot him, Leroy!
Excuse me, gentlemen, which way to the powder room?
It's abroad! In a mask!
I told you to stay in the car!
And miss all the fisticuffs? I think not.
Oh, my tooth! Abroad in a mask, knocked out my tooth!
Shooter, you numbskull, shooter!
You're waving that 45 around like it's Armistice Day at the old folks' home. I'm afraid I'll have to take it from you before someone gets hurt.
Oh, she broke my finger! Abroad in a mask, broke my finger! Oh.
Where did you learn to fight like that?
Finishing school. I can also tell you what hat to wear with a polo match and how to host tea with the Dowager Duchess.
And I see you just happen to have a second mask that just happened to match the dress you're wearing. You were planning for this the whole time, weren't you?
Not to change the subject, but Mr. Bloody Nose just pulled a darling little pistol from his sock.
I saw it. I was just waiting for the right moment to...
To kick him in the face? Coarse, but effective. Let's go inside and find Mr. Quimby.
What about the two gorillas out front?
Oh, I locked them in the trunk of their sedan for safekeeping.
Now you're just showing off. I could have handled this myself.
Oh, of course you could. After all, you're an ex-Pinkerton agent.
That's right. Wait. How did you know that?
Your posture. The way you enter a room. You're a man who's used to being in charge. Father would never hire a gardener with a criminal record, so I knew you weren't a trigger man. You're too insubordinate for the military and too well sculpted for the police. That leaves detective. I guess Pinkerton first, because it's a fun word to say. Pinkerton.
You are the most maddening, bullheaded, arrogant.
That's coming from inside.
Our heroes burst into the Blue Rune only to find the front door open and nearly empty bar. Sprawled on the floor amid the overturned tables and broken chairs is a pale-faced man, blood oozing from his chest.
It's Quimby. He's been shot.
What happened here, Mr. Quimby? Who shot you?
The device, the silencer, where is it?
Right here, I think.
What's left of it, anyway. Looks like a bullet went clean through it.
Ah, oh, it's destroyed. Good. I know it doesn't make up for what I did to Mr. Henderson, but at least I can die knowing the world is safe.
Who gave you this device, Mr. Quimby?
Birds will always sing.
You're a clever man, but not clever enough to build something like this.
Doors will always creak.
Is it the same man who shot you?
Ice cubes will always make that wonderful clink when they hit the bottom of your glass.
Who's behind this, Mr. Quimby?
Silence is only peaceful when we... choose it.
Mr. Quimby! Lawrence!
He's dead.
No!
What's wrong? He just solved a murder and saved the state some dough on their electric bill. We even recovered the remains of this weird science contraption. I say we pour ourselves a shot.
No, you don't understand. Henderson's murder is just the tip of a very bloody iceberg.
The lady is right. Look out, there's someone behind the bar. Oh, put down the gun, quick draw. I'm just the bartender.
Did you see who shot Quimby?
Sure I did. It was the Whispering Man.
The Whispering Man? Was he here?
Yeah, but he hightailed it right before you got here. We should do the same. It's about to be a sea of blue in here, and I don't mean the gin. Come on! Who is the Whispering Man?
A gangster. Nobody knows his real name, but he's the brains behind every criminal racket in Metro City.
So he's the Moriarty to your Sherlock Holmes?
I prefer the Moriarty to my Irene Adler.
And you think he's the man behind your mother's murder?
Well, I know he is. Wait, how did you...
Everyone in the country knows about the Dumont murder case. It was front page news for months. Your father sent you away to finishing school to keep you safe. Now that you're back...
He hired an ex-Pinkerton man to watch over me.
He was afraid you'd get yourself in trouble. Imagine that.
Well, do you plan to keep watching over me?
Do you plan to keep putting on a mask and fighting crime?
I won't even dignify that with an answer.
8 p.m. tomorrow, then? Burgundy rolls, not the topaz?
It's a date.
Meanwhile, in a secret hideout underneath an abandoned distillery, the Whispering Man receives a worrying report from one of his lackeys.
Bad news, boss. Joe the bartender spilled his guts to the coppers. They nabbed Reggie and the boys, too. Words on the street is they got worked over good by two guys in a mask. And get this, one of the guys was a broad.
I want them both dead. Do you hear me? I want every hood with a heater scouring the city night and day. Nobody sleeps. Nobody eats. Nobody breathes until I have their masked heads on a pike.
And so the scales of justice remain forever balanced. A job is lost, but another one is gained. A man murders for vengeance, but sacrifices for redemption. Two men die, but two heroes are born. The evil of the Whispering Man is answered by the good of... Wait. We almost forgot to name our heroes. We beg your indulgence for one more moment as we pay a brief visit to the Dumont Flower Garden.
Oh, there you are, darling. How are the tulips coming? I hope you haven't had to shoot any.
Did you just call me darling?
Yes, I think we've earned the right to be demonstrative now that we're married.
Did I miss something?
Only the morning paper.
Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk catch radio killer.
They named us. Isn't it delightful?
They think we're married?
Not we, them. Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk are alter egos. It's perfect. The Whispering Man will be looking for a married couple, not an heiress and her hired help. This means we're one step ahead of him already.
So I'm your gardener by day, chauffeur by night, and imaginary husband whenever it suits you.
Oh, darling, I couldn't have said it better myself.
And so closes the first of many thrilling adventures of Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk, brought to you by Lucky Llama Chewing Tobacco.
Fun to chew, twice as fun to spit.
Join us next time when Mr. and Mrs. Nighthawk entangle another sinister plot hatched from the deranged mind of the Whispering Man. This has been a Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society production. Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh. Stop. Oh. Thank you, everybody. We can't thank you guys enough for coming.
Shannon and I are married, and the four of us have been together for over 25 years
performing
theater.
That sounded weird.
Not together that way.
We're married, and then these are our friends.
These are friends.
Nice save.
Nice. Yeah.
We have our own wives.
Now you know why I married her. She saves me.